Blog Talk Radio.
Hello?
Welcome to Blog Talk Radio. This is XXBN. I think there's supposed to be a music bit at some point if it's going to come on. There it is. There's our instrumental music. My name is Jill Brenneman. This is XXBN, the Swabby Broadcast Network, based in Raleigh, Durham, North Carolina. Tonight's guest, Renegade Evolution. Ren, welcome to the show.
Hey, how are you doing?
Good. How are you doing, Ren?
Oh, I'm doing all right.
Ren has graciously agreed to come on to replace a controversial guest who was unable to come on. Thank you for coming on at the short notice, Ren.
Oh, not a problem. I'm kind of upset that our controversial guest isn't going to be on. I was looking forward to listening to him.
Yeah, me too. You know, I was kind of looking forward to it, and I tried to recruit someone of similar thought process, but you just couldn't get any takers. Maybe in the future.
Maybe. And for someone of an opposite mind, he actually can be quite reasonable. So maybe at a future date he'll come on and talk to you, and we can listen and call him and ask him questions.
Well, hopefully he will come on to the show. You know, I've once you get past the bravado and past the rhetoric, I agree with you. I found it. You know, he could be okay. He could be civil.
Yep.
And you know, I always found that our guest who was unable to come on, at least he believes in what he's doing.
That's true. And, if he's listening, you know, we would like him to do a show sometime because it would be great.
He would. And for those expecting him, please do not be afraid to call in. I know there's this wall of fear that seems to permeate some potential guests. Everything will be okay.
That's true.
You know, it surprises me sometimes that, well, you know, when Carol Lee was on, that so many people were afraid to call in.
Right.
You know, and it's like, oh, Carol's sweet. You know, it's don't be afraid. It's okay. You know, unless you come onto the show and rip. We can be reasonable, and if the caller isn't reasonable, we just hang up on them.
Exactly, exactly. But yes, that's true. I think that sometimes people are afraid they're going to get their heads ripped off. But then again, we're afraid of the same thing in certain environments as well. So I suppose it's generalized fear all around.
Except I don't know if they let us on their talk radio.
Well, that's true.
Can you picture us being invited to the Melissa Farley radio network?
No, I can't. And, you know, I think it would be awesome if that happened, though, but I don't ever see it happening.
No, I don't either. She doesn't let me post on her blog, so.
Me either, and we tried. We tried once upon a time. I recall that event merely to question her use of a certain photo, no less.
That very photo, you know, the
now infamous photo, yes.
The infamous photo that if you go to prostitution research, what is it, prostitutionresearchandeducation.com?
Yeah, that, or I think you can get there from her traffic jamming blog as well. There it is. And you know, she when originally that picture was up there, it wasn't behind a cut, it wasn't hidden. It was right there on the front of the page, and it was only moved after, voices from certain areas, like, oh, yourself and myself, pointed out to her that if she's worried about traumatizing and triggering people, what is she doing with that photo right there where, you know, gee, anyone with a net connection, no matter how old they are or no matter what kind of triggers they might have, it's right there.
You know, and I don't know about you, Ren, but, you know, I'm very much for sex worker rights. If I have an 8-year-old, I don't want my 8-year-old seeing that picture.
Exactly. Completely. I mean, I admit that I have, you know, some racy pictures on my blog, but nothing of that caliber. And pretty much anything. I mean, it says right on the front page of a lot of the sex workers' blogs are right out there that, you know, this is not a place for children, and it is, you know, perhaps not safe for work, and it, they contain nudity. But on a lot of the anti-blogs that use these kind of photos, there's no such warning whatsoever.
No, and, you know, the warning, according to the website, prostitutionresearch.com, of course, we got no credit. She finally put something to the effect of, after hearing the responses of survivors of torture, but she did at least put up a disclaimer.
Right.
Which explains what's coming.
Right.
You know, what one of her blog posters, of course, strongly advocates that one look at the picture.
Right, but, right.
You know, apparently, according to this blog poster named Pony, you know, essentially, well, in her words, everyone should see it. So I don't know how she's defining everyone, but...
Well, that particular commenter and I have some history, and it's kind of like she will take any opportunity to give me a bad time at this point. But yeah, I thought it was interesting that she, you know, said that she put it behind a warning because of, you know, for survivors, but it wasn't the survivors that pointed out, you know, how offensive that image could be deemed to some people. It was either people who are sort of ambivalent about sex work and pornography, and people who are like ourselves. So I find it interesting that she can't even give the credit to people that are not of her mindset.
You know, I've pulled up the story page, and it says, in response to comments of sexual torture and their sexual abuse, we have placed a warning and additional link to the photograph of the King.com torture, which since Farley is housing this on her website, I would dare say this is, you know, become the prostitutionresearch.com torture. Traffic jamming, which is the name of the blog, traffic jamming visitors can now choose if and when they look at the photographs. And then you follow with Pony saying, please do look at the photographs, which are not owned by the people depicted, but by the torturers. As long as the only people who see these and others like them are the torturers and torture and pornography consumers, women haters, abusers, and traffickers win, because ordinary people will not see what pornography is really about.
Yep, and that's, you know, one assumption right there, that all porn is the same as that photo from kink.com. And of course, as we've discussed before, no one knows how the woman in the photograph feels about you know, shooting it for them, and then, of course, it being used on Melissa Farley's blog. Chances are she'd be less than thrilled, I would think.
You know, I would think that, too. To be perfectly honest, I would be, well, this is a family show, of course, so I'm not supposed to use that word, so,
Livid?
Livid is a very good word, yes. You know, if one wants to make that political statement, one should be from that political side, or at least be willing to make that political statement. And, you know, there are plenty of people on that from that position, and if they feel that strongly about opposing that, I don't understand why they just don't take the picture themselves.
Exactly. And, well, I mean, they always, you find constantly on the anti-sex industry sites, you know, all of these stories from people who are, you know, who are former sex workers or former porn performers themselves that have joined the anti-side. If you can get their stories and, you know, use their images, if you have that many of them, why not use theirs instead of somebody that, you know, hasn't consented to it or you don't know how they feel about it? That's always kind of been my question. If they have all of these ex-sex workers who are on the same page as them, they have a plethora of people to say how it really is who would consent to doing that, as opposed to using the images and words of those who have not.
Well, you know, and I think you brought up, you illustrated a very good point, you know, that maybe has been missed, you know, that they don't want to put their, for lack of a better word, that, you know, they don't want to put there are people in that position that they'd rather regulate that to, you know, the class that, that they feel is beneath them. You know, from what I've found with that movement, you know, there are two types of women that have been in the sex industry. You know, there are the good ones who have seen the light and now call themselves prostituted women and, you know, tell the story from the correct perspective, according to Farley and Hughes and that ilk. And there's everybody else, you know, the evildoers. And you know, I think to them it's black and white. You know, you're either good or bad.
Bad, exactly. And it's very much, I have always said that, you know, I enjoy reading Orwell, with this whole, you know, some women are more equal than others line that gets thrown out a lot. I like reading it. I don't like living it. And that's exactly what it seems to be. If you sing the right tune, you are entitled once again to, you know, your full aspects as a human being with these people. But if you don't, you're lesser than. You know, you are subject to any and every stereotype or slander they can throw at you.
And both of us have certainly been subjected. You know, Tony, the poster that we have discussed, the one that has given you some trouble, she doesn't, to quote her, she doesn't entertain conversation with me. I'm not really sure how to take something like that.
Well, I don't know. I've gone a few rounds with her. She said some pretty, I mean, she's attacked everything from my physical appearance to, you know, she's, made flat-out erroneous accusations about my interests in talking about the issues that I talk about. So, I mean, I don't know. I just at this point just assume avoid her. But yeah, she and it's fairly. I found it fairly common that the tactics that are used to try and get us to not say what we want to say or what we think is important are really pretty dastardly. I mean, we talked about it last time with the threats and the stalking and stuff like that, but even the lesser stuff is just amazing. And what slays me is, I mean, recently you posted a bit about your story, and your story and mine are totally opposite. I mean, we've had very different experiences in a great many realms in the sex industry business, but we're still on the same side because even with the different backgrounds, we see that this, you know, the outreach and the activism and the rights are a workable plan as opposed to this nebulous, super secret plan that no one can have access to because we'll thwart it or undermine it or something. And it amazes me. If people can't tell you what a plan is, it obviously isn't practical enough to work, is my opinion.
646-200-3136. That's the number you can join us at. 646-200-3136. It's local in New York City. My guest is Renegade Evolution. My name is Joe Brennan, and this is XBN, the Swappiest Broadcast Network. We are powered by Blog Talk Radio. You know, I hate it when I have to do these ideas because they always throw off my thought process. I have completely drawn a blank, but I got my AARP card rent, so I have the right to have senile moments now.
It's okay. It's all right. No, the thing is, the whole subject of this whole, you know, the super secret plan and all that other kind of stuff can just fry your brain after a while. I've come to that conclusion.
Well, you know, that may just be it. You know, that we're talking about a secret plan to end the entire sex industry, and taking it from their perspective, that would even mean wiping out Hooters. That is a plan that's just beyond my grasp, Bren. I don't know that I can conceptualize that.
I don't see outside of, like, full nuclear holocaust how it can happen, truthfully. Erotic depictions and writing and sex are, they're as old as humanity itself. I'm pretty sure shortly after we crawled out of the primordial ooze, we figured out how to breed and found it interesting. So I don't see how it's going to work. And the fact that they say they have a plan, but they can't even let on when it is, you know, at the same time saying that they're so concerned about these women, you know, well, hurry up and get out with the plan, because in the meantime, you know, women are having their choice eroded and their autonomy questioned. questioned, or they are in situations which are really pretty dire that they'd rather get out of, and you know, sitting around waiting for a plan to go into action isn't helping them much, really. None of them. It's not helping any of them. So I find the whole thing ironic, and the fact that they, you know, say, "Oh, we can't tell you because you know you'll destroy our master super secret plan." Just, I mean, my God, what is it's Pinky in the Brain, you know? What are we going to do tonight, Pinky? What we do every night, take over the world? That's what it starts to sound like to me.
Well, I mean, what could we even do to destroy it? You know, and for the listener who's listening, the plan we're discussing, there's a fear of feminist and conservative activists who state they have a plan to end the sex industry. I've seen Ren blog posting on many blogs. I've asked the question myself on my own blog and other blogs, what is the plan? I mean,
and in the meantime, we've asked and we've heard nothing but crickets. It just amazes me. I mean, someone, I think as a half joke, said that we need to, you know, write a book called What's the Plan? Because no one's willing to even when you have discussions, you know, with huge varieties of feminist-leaning people or humanitarian-leaning people or what have you, and somebody says, well, how do you make this better? It's always the people who are the in the here and now activists that are saying, well, this is what you need to do and this is what you need to consider. And then you have these people that are like, well, you need to do this, but we can't tell you what it is kind of thing. And at this point, I almost just laugh. I mean, for a while, I was frustrated there, but now it's kind of like, obviously, you have no plan. So we're paranoid enough that you think that we'd actually try to undermine something that could be helpful. So I just laugh at this point. It makes me laugh.
Well, you know, it kind of reminds me of the weapons of mass destruction in Iraq, you know. I mean, we kept hearing, there are weapons of mass destruction, there are weapons of mass destruction.
Right.
There is a secret plan. You know, at what point are they going to...
Are they going to unveil it? Yeah. I don't know. I expect it will be long after our bones have turned to dust, truthfully.
You know, perhaps these people should be planning wars, you know, if they did, the planet would be at peace.
Exactly, that's true. That might be a good idea there. But so I had a meltdown earlier this week on my blog because somebody was talking about how, you know, why do I get so upset when, you know, various anti-sex industry bloggers and speakers say the things they say. Why do I take the time to call them out and quote them and get all upset about it? And I'm sitting here thinking, you know, A, who are you to tell me what I can and can't get upset about? But, I mean, these are not marginal people. I mean, you have people like Hughes and Kraft and Farley and Jensen who are big names who get all this media attention, you know, and they help inform government policy and shape, you know, funding on all of these things, and they don't care to listen to the other side. I honestly don't think they care about the other side, period, even though it's made up of people just like them. And I'm supposed to not get upset when these people are sitting around playing, you know, Masters of the Universe with people like Mai's Destiny and your source of income and human rights. It amazes, you know, why wouldn't I get upset about that is my question.
Well, you know, and since I've known you, and I guess it's gone on at least a year, you've always been reasonable with people who are reasonable with you. You know, mm-hmm. the people who come on and, you know, do the same kind of garbage that they do with me, you know, immediately, you know, comments about physical appearance or about intelligence or you know, distortions of every absurd sort. You know, I think that those are the ones that are getting called out strongly, and the ones that come in civilly, you know, and there certainly are plenty. Oh no, there are plenty. There certainly are some radical feminists and anti-sex industry activists who have come. Well, I shouldn't even say plenty. I can think of two.
I know a few, and they do. A lot of them do come in very subtle and very civil, and I'm more than willing to talk to those people. And that, but at the same time, in many ways, they are far more dangerous than their you know, foul-mouthed, outspoken, insulting companions, because a lot of people are much more likely to listen to and believe somebody that, you know, can appeal to their emotion, but at the same time seem friendly or polite and reasonable, because they come in looking for a conversion in a lot of ways, and Farley, you don't see her, you know, standing up on stage swearing up a storm, which is why that she gets listened to, I think. She seems so reasonable and educated and whatnot, but she, like a bunch of the other ones, you know, the tactics they engage in to silence their opposition, you know, they may not be swearing, but it's pretty uncouth, I think. I mean, it's unethical, in my opinion.
Maybe that explains why you never see Nikki Craft anymore.
Yeah, because she's a little, you know, she's pretty hardcore, and I kind of have some respect for that. At least you know where she stands. You know,
yeah.
At least you don't think that she's going to be your friend and stab you in the back. She's just going to stab you in the back outright.
Yes. No, there's little doubt about that. You know, one visit to the Nikki Craft website, or certainly an interaction where there is direct.
Right. And well, I mean, I had some interaction with Robert Jensen, and you know, he was never anything but polite to me. I mean, never insulted my intelligence or even my stance on things. But it kind of felt like, you know, I'm talking to a wall here. He just had no interest whatsoever in listening or even acknowledging that there could be a point of view different from his own.
Now, Jensen's doing the Willock conference.
Right.
And he's doing it. Gail Dines.
Mm-hmm. I'll be there.
That's an event you'll be at, correct?
Right. And, but I mean, Dines is by far the more aggressive and outspoken of the two of them from what anything I've ever seen. Jensen's whole stick is, you know, that he's speaking as a man to men, but these audiences aren't primarily made up of men, they're made up of women. And he does all this about, you know, I'm not here to tell women what to think, but then he turns around and does exactly that. I mean, if you read any of his speeches, they're very emotional and they will definitely, you know, pull at your gut. But the language that he uses is just so, if you really look, it's very, dehumanizing to the women that he's literally trying to supposedly protect and whose interests he has at heart and who he's trying to get you to empathize with. It just amazes me that he is trying to do all this, but he's so incredibly dismissive. It amazes me.
Angel Brentman, this is XBN, the Swappies Broadcast Network. Join us, 646-200-3136, 646-200-3136. We're talking about the Wheelock Conference on porn. We are discussing various prohibitionist, feminist / conservative viewpoints, and you are certainly welcome to join us. Now, again, they're not going to let anyone from the sex worker rights side speak at Wheelock this year. Am I correct in understanding that?
They have no one invited. That doesn't mean I talked to some people about actually going to this event, and I wouldn't be there to disrupt it. I'd be there to hear it, and you know, possibly not, you know, in a big conference or whatever, but maybe get to talk to somebody, you know, with a different point of view. I'd spoken to other sex worker activists about maybe crashing the party, as it were. I was going to do that last time, but I decided, you know, unless someone's coming with me with bail money, it's probably not worth it. But I don't know. It seems what really kind of put the nail in the coffin for me with me at least wanting to go and see it this year was not only the use of the slideshow images, but the fact that you can now get college credit for attending these.
You know, and I've seen these slideshows, and I'm somewhat familiar with the background on the slideshow, and the copyright on the slideshow is established. University that initially put the slideshow together, which my understanding is the University of North Carolina. Nowhere do they have consent of the people depicted. You know, to be perfectly honest, I found some of the images kind of jaw-dropping.
Of course, they're claiming, you know, fair use for educational purposes, and I'm really curious to, you know, after talking to a lot of people, to see how that, you know, pans out against 2257. Federal law versus fair use. It's an interesting. It would be an interesting case if it ever made it to a court of law, I think. And granted, I understand that a lot of porn producers and production companies, you know, they avoid the law as much as possible. They don't want the headache. I can understand that. But, I've seen some of the pictures from the slideshows, and they are pretty typical of what you see in porn out there. But, you know, not one of these women in any of them have been asked how they feel about it. And it's that whole thing we talked about last time. I mean, they're against exploitation, but they're exploiting these women for their own reasons. And really, I mean, they're using them as a freak show at kind of aspects to it, in that, you know, oh, point and look and see how horrifying this is, when, you know, these women who are in these films and have performed on these internet sites, you know, the people who filmed them have their consent and they have their proof of age, and, you know, there's no reason to assume that they weren't there of their own volition, but then here they are in the slideshows with none of that.
You know, and with the sense of entitlement by the those that are presenting the slideshows, that, well, I don't need to get this. I don't need this permission. You know, I'm above the law because I'm protected under fair use for education.
Exactly. Well, and it's one of those things that, yet again, and I mean, it's going to sound ironic when I say it, because I have college degrees on my wall, is a bunch of, you know, relatively well-off academics who are predominantly white people, as are most of the women in the images they use, truthfully, are white folk. But it's, you know, they remind me of, you know, the church social group, and, you know, what poor underprivileged people are we going to save today, whether they need it or not? And I know that the radical porn or radical feminist anti-porn and sex industry contingent hates it when they're compared to the religious right, and I try to avoid it a lot of the time, because I think a lot of them are not necessarily originally coming from that point, but when they get all wrapped up in these causes, that's exactly, I mean, they're on a crusade. They are on a crusade, and you don't get much more, you know, religiously similarly tied than that.
You know, I remember questioning an image that I saw during one of these presentations, and it was a bestiality shot, and it depicted an African American woman, and it was a bestiality shot with, if I remember right, a horse. And my question was, right from that outset, was, you know, even to make a political point, to say this is terrible, you know, do you use that picture for an audience of 400 or 500 people, you know, with a woman that has no idea it's being used? You know, she may very well have left the industry. You know, I'm not even sure that anybody cared, you know, whether she was coerced or agreed to even take that picture, and you know, my argument was that, you know, it's even worse if this woman was coerced into taking the shot in the first place. That not only was she exploited into taking a shot, but now the shot itself is being exploited.
Exactly, and then there's the whole, you know, if she has left the industry, or she performed in that image, you know, under less than ideal circumstances, or, you know, was coerced into doing it or whatnot, and say she's left and her life is together now, and, you know, she's working, you know, at someone's office or in a store somewhere, and someone who's seen one of these shows walks in and there she is. I mean, anyone can get their hands on this slideshow. It could be easily used to blackmail a woman in her position. And I think that's something that they also haven't considered.
No, I agree. I don't think they've considered it at all, you know. And I know that the vast majority of us, that, you know, a picture like that, if you've got, you know, the job in the office, the flight attendant job, whatever, picture like that shows up, you know, you're out of a job.
Right, or, I mean, what if this woman has children?
Exactly.
You know? Exactly. I mean, her entire life could be destroyed by something like that getting out. But there it is in a slideshow, and she never consented to be there.
You know, to me, it's kind of like dropping, you know, it's kind of like dropping an atomic weapon on a major city and saying, well, it's for the good of all the people.
Well, it's very, and you know, what I would appreciate out of these folks, it would be so refreshing just to hear, it would be a little bit honesty, which is, you know, we're really, really, really against pornography, and to make an omelet, you have to splatter a few eggs, but none of them will say that. None of them will be just so honest as to say that, you know, we're willing to what we think is the greater good is to hurt the people now. And that's exactly what they're doing, and none of them will say it. They won't admit to it. And in the meantime, it's people like myself and you, and countless other, you know, activists or sex industry workers who say, you know, this is not the case, who are the monsters and the bad guys.
Well, you know, and that itself has been one of the great criticisms of my activism. You know, when I slipped to harm reduction and sex worker rights, I couldn't believe the outcry.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can't give condoms to them. They're still working.
Exactly. And it's kind of like, okay, would you rather them work without those? Would you rather them not have condoms? Would you rather them, you know, be out there unprotected whatsoever? Because they're still going to work. They're going to work one way or the other, you know?
My question was, well, okay, if we're deciding that we're having, you know, a war against the sex industry, how many people are expendable?
Exactly. I mean, how many people are they willing to sacrifice, you know, in this great and nebulous plan that may never come? And that just floors me. And, you know, I expect that more out of, say, the religious right type of activists, because, you know, they're against sex aside from, you know, marriage and procreation. So, you know, I expect that out of them, but I don't expect it out of any other sort of activist who is, you know, against the sex industry. You'd think that If these women and men working in this industry matter to you at all, anything that can be done to make their jobs, which are already dangerous, a little bit safer, you think they'd be behind? Because it's not gonna. I mean, if we're taking you know the stereotype that they like to work with, which is a person who has no other choices, who's doing this solely to put food on their table and possibly a roof over their head and you know maintain basic. You know, subsistence living. They're not gonna stop doing it, one way or the other. And it's better that they can be as safe as they can be, than you know, no protections, even in the littlest sense, like you know, with condoms, than out there with none of that. You'd think they'd be behind it.
Well, there are two organizations that Swampies works with, and they are chastised by certain members of the radical feminist community, they lost their funding from the United States due to the anti-prostitution charge.
Right.
And they are chastised for giving coffee in the winter in Santiago to working sex workers.
Yep. It makes no sense at all. It's like, oh, we want to save these people, but we don't care if they, you know, get AIDS and die in the first place. Right, exactly. It makes zero sense to me at all.
You know, well, once again, you know, you can almost bring up the historical allegories to that. You know, well, we're going to throw X amount of soldiers and civilians into this war, and the war is for, you know, a great monolithic cause, and except that they won't even cop to that.
Right, exactly. And it's, I mean, and he's the exact type of people that they are using in their arguments are the ones that are hurting the most. I mean, it's, you know, folk like me, I can go out and buy my own condoms and see to my own safety and go to a doctor or, you know, hire a lawyer if I need one kind of things. And, you know, these people are, denying any of that privilege at all to the very people who need it the most when they're pulling, you know, stunts like this.
You know, to say, well, if you give a condom to a sex worker in Santiago or San Diego or, you know, any place, you are pro-trafficking, pro-porn, pro-slaves, pro-all this bovine excrement.
Exactly. It completely is. And the whole crazy assertion that anybody who is you know, pro-sex workers' rights or whatever is pro-trafficking, pro-pimp, pro-whatever is, to use the words I used so much last time because, yes, it's a family show, it's bunk. It amazes me. I mean, Farley talking about, you know, the pro-pimp lobby, which I loved that show that you did the other day about that. That was great. Is that, you know, the people that were objecting to her were not pimps and were not traffickers. They were sex workers. The actual people doing the job, and then she comes in with this high and mighty, you know, proclamation. And I'll even go far to say, I mean, as far as I know, of the people that I've interacted with, and, I mean, we've talked about it before, and Lord knows we had some long conversations with the person that was supposed to be the guest tonight. I am fairly pro-porn, and I'm pretty hardcore in my stances about a lot of things, but trafficking and pimping, no. It's two whole different things. There's the whole matter of, you know, there's a huge difference between a 14-year-old forced into prostitution and a 21-year-old who chooses to work in the sex industry. And you can, you know, be for helping the 14-year-old and leaving the 21-year-old alone. You can be both at the same time. And,
well, yeah.
And people don't want to wrap their heads around that.
One of the things that's been asked of me when I've gone to Santiago, you know, to do various outreach or, you know, et cetera, in Chile, you know, if you see a trafficking victim, are you going to help her? Well, of course. You know, and you know, I'm sure, I have no doubt. I mean, if you see the 14-year-old girl being stuck in the trunk of a car at a truck stop while you're traveling across country, that's going to raise eyebrows to you, and you're probably going to say, you know, I probably need to call the police.
Exactly, and it's just, I mean, the way, and I also, it makes me crazy that any conversation that people try to have about any aspect of sex work or the sex industry or what can be done, you know, it immediately, some anti-sex industry person shows up and it's like, well, what about the children? What about the trafficking? You could be talking about, you know, you could be talking about strip shows in Vegas, for Christ's sake, and someone comes up and totally derails whatever the conversation is with that same exact argument, and it's used completely as a way to embroil, you know, everything together and make it a monolith and to derail whatever conversation is going on. And the assumption that, you know, that people who are you know, from extremely pro-porn to just sex workers' rights advocates, you know, nod and smile and say, yeah, trafficking and child prostitution is great, is the biggest load of, you know, bovine feces there is.
It is. You know, I mean, if anything, you know, despite my alleged evil pro-porn, pro-all of this stances, you know, I would probably be very likely to put myself on the line if I felt that somebody was being trafficked to try to stop it, to try to get help.
Exactly.
You know, even just out of sheer anger, you know, probably because I've got a big mouth and a short temper that you know, be quick to ask, you know, the person that's putting the 14-year-old in the trunk, you know, what the procreation are you doing? You know, like,
exactly, and people, it's something that, you know, we've both, you know, talked about before is the way that the anti-industry folk try to discredit anything that any of us say. They have to make us villains or victims and to get their message across with the punch they want it to have. We can't just be people. I mean, you get to be a victim or you get to be a villain. You can't be a human being with complex feelings on these issues, because then it messes with what it is they're trying to do. And I think I'm afraid that both of us, you know, we've been thrown into the villain category, which, you know, in a way for me is refreshing. I'd actually rather be thought of that way than that as, you know, some poor deluded person. But yeah, it's that seems to be what's happened with both of us, and it makes things very complicated.
Now, how do you feel about the villain role? Because I know at first it pissed me off, but you know, I've kind of become amused by it, because it's become so outlandish, you know, from accusations. I forget what the latest one was, you know, PhD Blumenthal saying, you know, that I'm suffering from Stockholm Syndrome, and I know not what I do, but I need to be stopped before I do what I know not that I'm doing.
Exactly. I actually, if you know, like I said, if the choice must be made, I would definitely take the villain role over the other opportunities or other options open to me, because I'm mouthy, I'm loud, I can be very, very abrasive, and if coming across as that aggressive and being, you know, well, as our friend once referred to me, the Frankenstein's monster, is what's available to me, fine, I'll do that, because at least that way, it's, you know, I'm a thinking, you know, thinking creature who's made choices, as opposed to some deluded person that, you know, has no options, or, you know, is just so brainwashed. Either way, both of them make my skin crawl, but if I have to pick one, that will be it.
Well, at least there's some fun to being, you know, the bad guy. You know, I had always kind of said that in another lifestyle as a pro wrestler, I wanted to be the bad guy.
Right, right. Well, it's. I think that it's, you hear, I think with both of us, I think we've both found people that are like, you know, thank you for saying what you have to say, and, you know, being brave enough to put it out there and speaking your truth, because it's what mine is. But I'm afraid to take the slings and arrows that go with saying it. And to me, that's, you know, that makes it worth it. That makes it worth all of the nasty stuff. If you have people say, you know, thank you for you know, doing what I was afraid to do, but now maybe I can do it myself. Because I think a lot of folks in our position who are out there reading and listening are just so intimidated by what the anti-side has to say, and the way that the stereotyping is rampant. I mean, the assumption that, you know, every single one of us, you know, has to be, you know, out of our minds on God only knows how many chemical substances and, you know, all this other kind of stuff. I don't like it any better than anyone else does. And it's applied so heavily and universally to everybody. If you know, being the raging aggressive maniac of the blog world is what it takes to be seen as something other than that, then so be it. But at the same time, you know, then whenever somebody goes to discredit an argument I make, it's that, you know, I'm sociopathic, or I'm insane or something, which is, you know, just another way to discredit somebody who disagrees with you.
You know, that's exactly right. Those are the very things, of course, that have been said to me. You know, between that and the, you know, I've developed this. I don't know if it's because I switched sides, you know, back in 2003, and somehow have built up this fear factor, or, you know, I get this endless, you know, call out your army of infiltrators and.
Exactly. I mean, it's pretty apparent to me that there's a lot of folks out there that literally think that we have, you know, our own version of CIA black ops or whatever working for us, and that's just not the case. I think some people are so intimidated by the idea that they can go out there and they can read, you know, Farley and Kraft or whatever, and then they can turn around and they can read, you know, like BNG or my blog or your space, and see that their ideas fall more in line with our ideas than theirs. It scares them, or it threatens them somehow, that there are people out there that who find our stances more agreeable and reasonable than theirs. So, you know, we must have some sort of, you know, horrible little group of thugs out there intimidating into people seeing things our way.
Well, you know, and I think that, you know, bloggers and women such as ourselves, you know, we discredit the four stereotypes, you know, that you and I had talked about, you know, in pre-show briefing, you know, the 13-year-old traffic girl, the 20-something junkie stereotype, evil sellout mercenary, the bimbo, you know, I mean, essentially you're supposed to be one of those four, and there's no in between.
Right, exactly. And it seems that, yeah, you can't, like I said, you can't just be a person with your own views and opinions and experiences, because then you have to be seen as a human. And once you are, you know, viewed as human, the whole ball game changes for them, apparently. And so it's very easy to have to stick people into roles. And I've definitely been stuck in the mercenary one. That's a term that I've used jokingly myself for a long time, just because, you know, if you're going to take that kind of crap, you might as well have some fun with it.
You know, that's been my sense, too. You know, I've been put into the role, and if anything, it gives me a chance to use my sarcastic sense of humor. And
right, which you and I are both blessed with.
We're both blessed with it, you know, and the amazing thing is that even the blatant sarcasm, you know, the discussion of prostitution amongst hummingbirds, you know, it gets next thing you know, I'm attracted to hummingbirds, you know, because I'm a bird feeder. And
I think with both of us, it's just that, I mean, I know from commenting on your blog that people come in and say some really horrible stuff, and you generally, you know, you extend the olive branch first. You do. You try to be reasonable at first. Now, I know that I've come in and made some comments that it's like, oh, let's just leave that in ashes now. But it seems, you know, you try to be reasonable, and you try to get your point across. We, you know, most of us do. Try to be reasonable at first and get our point across in a reasonable manner, but after two or three tries of this, you feel like you've been pounding your head against a brick wall, because this is not the first time you've had the argument. You know, it's the 16th or 17th hundred time. I haven't been asked this question 1,500 times before, and answered it 1,500 times before.
Well, and it almost comes down to a sense where you feel like the goal of some of these people is not even to essentially ask the question. It's to intimidate and to silence, you know, the activists from our side, the bad sex worker, you know, into silence.
Well, exactly. I mean, how many times do you get involved in a conversation with somebody, and sooner or later somebody rolls in, and then, you know, it is, okay, well, you're this stereotype, so we're going to throw out the 13-year-old trafficking victim, and, you know, what about child porn? Why don't you think that should be legal? And all this other kind of stuff, and that's basically it is. It's to back you down, to intimidate you, to get you to shut up, and I think it's just one of those things that tactic has been thrown at both of us so many times that, you know, not only do we have really good responses to it, but they're usually, you know, laced with the cynicism, and it's kind of like, you know, if you're going to have this conversation with me, bring your A game, because I've had it 18,000 times before, and I'm still willing to dialogue, but don't throw the same accusations at me that, you know, are thrown all the time. If you have a legitimate argument, bring it, but don't immediately, you know, be like, oh, well, you must be, you know, a rape-enabling, traffic-enabling, evil human being, because that's not going to get you very far. And it's not, a person who comes in with that attitude is not looking for a discussion. They are looking to silence and shame and shut you up.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And I think that's, you know, certainly one of the reasons why they don't let us post in their blogs. Well, our blogs, for the most part, are open to them, you know, and this talk show is open to them.
Right.
You know, I've put out probably 50 inquiries to, you know, the quote-unquote radical feminist side, and I've gotten two or three responses total, and, you know, then one who stated that she wouldn't give credibility to the garbage like this show.
Right.
And,
well, the thing is, at this point, they're the ones losing all the credibility. If they're not willing to, I mean, and I'm not talking the big names, they still have plenty of credibility, but your average, you know, activist, if you can't debate your points, if you can't engage with somebody who's not even hostile to you, but is just on the other side, who there is losing the credibility? If your site is locked down tighter than a drum and you allow no dissent, if you refuse to even engage with an intelligent, articulate, non-name-calling person, what that shows right there is that you're afraid. You're afraid that your argument won't stand up, that your position has, more holes in it than Swiss cheese, and you're not willing, you don't obviously believe in it enough to engage with somebody who is articulate and intelligent and, has their facts straight. And when you do see the debates, like on the media and stuff, between the two sides, the deck is always so stacked in, the anti-favor. And I think that really has to do with fear. I mean, if the world sees that there are sex workers and sex workers' rights activists that are, articulate, intelligent, savvy people who, know about technology and know about the law and know how to debate, then the precious little image that all of their arguments are based on, it crumbles like a house of cards, and they can't afford that to happen.
They can't, we're making some headway with our own media. I know that I've literally turned down more than one talk show over clothing. I've been offered the opportunity to be on, talk show X and talk show Y.
Right.
And where does it break down? Because they want me to come out and, a micro mini or,
You never know how it's going to get spun. You never know what's going to end up on the cutting room floor. You never know, walking in, you have no idea what they're going to ask you. I mean, I know people with the Spitzer case, a lot of us, myself included, turned down interviews. Because you just don't, in the modern media, the New York Times, the Washington Post, the LA Times, you don't know how they're going to spin it. And the story, the story that they want is, they want, all the solicitous details about what it's like to spend an evening, making $2,000 an hour with some high roller businessman or politician or whatever. They could care less about what we are like actually as people and what our interests are. And you have no way going into somebody else's forum of knowing how much of what you say is going to make it to the end print and if you might accidentally get outed in the process.
And how they're going to use it and how they're going to edit it and
right, exactly. And so I can see why a lot of people turn it down, which is why I think it's great that we're starting to have our own, our own forums and media and things like that, because then, no one gets a chance to edit what we say except for us, and most of us don't do that. We're not real big on self-censoring. I mean, most of the sex workers and sex worker outreach blogs that I read and shows that I've heard, I mean, these are ladies and gentlemen that lay it out flat, the hard line, the way they see it, and it's refreshing and it's good, and I think that it scares the living bejesus out of, our opponents.
I completely agree, and one of the things that, I've been notorious for on my blog, I'm notorious for on this show, is that it's an open forum. Nobody's going to get censored. I mean, I guess we have to do the minimal censoring on this so that Blog Talk Radio doesn't shut us down.
Right. Well, that's a matter of watch your language, not what you have to say. You and I both, and most of the advocates and sex workers that I know, they have very much an open door policy. You come in and you say what you want. And if you act like a jerk, it's entirely possible you will be treated like a jerk. But very rarely are comments deleted or, if somebody comments on my blog and it's, pure out racism and hate or whatever, no, I'm not going to post it. Or if I do, it gets its own little special section of shame. But pretty much everything ends up there, especially if it's an anti-argument, because I don't believe in not letting the other side speak. I mean, I have a blog that is, it's referred to as the pro-porn activism blog. I have links to the opposition. I have links to Farley. I have links to Kraft, because I believe in two sides of an argument. And there's no way that folk in our position ever get that sort of consideration in return.
No, never.
To me, that's just them being afraid. Their little idea and their little ideology is so incredibly precious to them that they cannot engage with someone who can, they can put up every single sob story about, the 14-year-old girl forced into prostitution that they can find, but they cannot engage with, an adult who has been there or is still there and can, fight them on an even ground, as it were. And I'm sure, you hear the line all the time about how we're so privileged and everything, but, if people look at a lot, not so much. I mean, no more privileged than these anti-women and men and whoever else who are blogging and talking and taking up media space.
I know for a fact that Donna Hughes drives a much nicer car than I do.
Yeah, I have a Saturn, it's not like I'm actually, I don't have a PhD, and I don't have an ear to the government, and, I make house payments like everybody else. Sure, I have some nice things in my life, but guess what's paid for them? sex work is paid for them. And it's just, it drives me nuts when you have these anti folks talking about how, special and privileged us few handful of sex workers and sex workers' rights advocates are when, I know personally I didn't come from money. Not by a long shot did I come from money, nor am I either, 100% Lily White either. I mean, anything that I have, I've worked for. And I may have done it in an industry that they don't approve of, but, I'm not the one at getting my master's degree in women's studies on mommy and daddy's dime. So, I don't want to hear it from them,
You're also not the one attending conferences complaining that the government puts you up at a 4-star hotel instead of 5,
Right. Or, I have no book deals, nothing like that. It's just, the conference that I'm going to this weekend, I paid for my own plane ticket, I paid for my own hotel room, and I paid for my own conference entry fee. I'm not getting paid to be anywhere except for work.
Jeez, we should get you on a live remote from the conference.
Well, I think I'm going to be pretty busy, but I'll definitely blog about it, or I'd be happy to come on and talk about it once it's all over. But, it's just, it blows my mind that, and it's, oh my God, I have a computer, I'm privileged. Well, so do you. If you're sitting there blogging anti, you have a computer too, So don't rub that in my face.
Exactly. We've got about 2 minutes left. Where can people find your blog then?
I am Renegade Evolution, one word, at blogspot.com, and it's not particularly safe for work, and it's not all sex work and politics all the time either. I just did a huge post on the Lord of the Rings trilogy yesterday, but it is definitely there, and the sarcasm flows freely.
Tomorrow,
but it's interesting reading.
I totally recommend that you check out Ren's blog. Tomorrow's guest, Bill Nelson, affectionately known as the Cadillac of Words. I don't even begin to know how else to introduce him. Bill is going to be a great show. Once again, the Cadillac of Words. I want to take a moment to thank all the artists that have lined up behind us on this project, letting us use their music. And Liz Berlin, the Cowboy Junkies, Naked Heroes, Heaven Nova, Jim Donovan, John Bynack, Rachel Jacobs, The Whores, they've all graciously allowed us to use their music, sent supportive posts for our work. It's really great to know that we're getting mainstream support. So please check out their music. You can get links to their websites via xxbn.net, which is the homepage for XBN. Ren, we've got about 30 seconds. Is there anything you want to add before?
I'll say goodbye and good night, and thanks for having me.
Well, thank you for joining us once again, Ren, and for bailing me out after my last guest was unable to attend. It's always great to have you on the show.
Well, thanks.
This is XXBN, XXBN.net, Raleigh, Durham, Chapel Hill, a service of Swap East Media, powered by Blog Talk Radio. thank you so much, Ren.